Welcome to Hype Podcast, episode 180. This is Hypeable.com's flagship show where we bring you all the latest news in entertainment and pop culture every week. My name is Pamela and I'll be your host today. Selena is off doing super awesome things at Walker Soccer Con, I think it's what it's called, in London. I'm sure you may have seen on Twitter that she's been like hosting the 100 panels and doing really cool interviews. And so we're so excited that she's able to do that because, as you guys know, the 100 is just such a special show to her and she does a great job covering it. So unfortunately, she's not here to record this episode with me, but I have a special guest. I'm so excited to have Kyle back on. Kyle, hey. It's been so long.
Woo! I'm so excited. Oh my gosh. It's been like months and months, maybe even a year or more, probably a year or more, at least a year.
But you did do the Sense8 special.
Oh, okay, yes, Sense8. All right, yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so much fun. If you guys haven't seen Sense8, watch it, and if you have and you haven't heard of our special, go listen to it. It's awesome.
Yeah, you did it with Brandy and Nassim, right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh,
they're so good at podcasting. They're like, they brought up some really great discussion points, and it was really fun to talk about.
That's super cool. That's still, Sense8 is still one of those shows that I need to watch. My Netflix queue is like consistently way too long for me to keep up with, but I know we have a lot of really big fans of that show. So if you guys want to reminisce and feel all the feels, I'm sure that you guys did a great job at addressing a lot of the different things that that show brings up, but also just the future of what could be on Netflix with Sense8 and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. So we have not a special this time. We're actually going to record a regular show. We're going to do some hyping. We're going to do some TV show of the week. We're going to talk about some of the bigger news that broke this week. And we're also going to talk a little bit about the Oscars. We're coming up on like a week since that took place, but we think it's still kind of important to talk about that. But before we jump into the big news, we do want to remind you about all of our contact information. For starters, you can always reach us via Twitter. We are at HypeableHype on there. We're also at HypeableHype on Instagram in case you want to follow along on any of the pop culture related adventures the hosts are having while they're not recording, i.e. while Selena and I are not recording. I'm actually heading out to LA next week to do some fun pop culture things, so hopefully I'll have some little tidbits to share with you guys while I'm out there. If you have other lengthy comments, you can leave them in the show notes on hypeable.com. And alternatively, we also have an email address, so you can email us at hype@hypeable.com. There are plenty of ways to get in contact with us, and we love hearing from you guys, so don't be shy. Write us and let us know what you're thinking, how you're feeling, or, you know, just let us know about anything that you want us to talk about in the future, because we love getting your input.
Tell us all the feels.
Yes, tell us all the feels. We're gonna kick things off, as always, with How We Hype, our signature segment on here. And I feel like we're going to talk about a lot of these feels that we just mentioned right now, because both of us have some pretty cool little things
to bring up. Oh my gosh.
Yes. So tell me about your first thing that you've put in the doc here.
I didn't realize that Selena had already talked about the second thing.
She actually hasn't. Selena put these in so that she could talk, foreshadowing for episode 181. She probably just doesn't want to forget. So.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'll talk about my first thing. I just finished reading They Both Die at the End by Adam Silvera. And I loved it. I actually have been meaning to read this for like a year or so, because Adam is actually a good friend of mine, and I love reviewing his books, and he gave me his book to review a year ago, right before it came out, and I never got to it, and I felt really bad. But I was finally able to actually finish it, and it's so good. The love story is like so subtle. Like, you'd think it'd be like this kind of really stereotypical sappy like gay love story from like beginning to end, but like, not even. I'm not even gonna like talk about it because I don't want to spoil it that much. It's just really, really good. And the way that, I mean, they both die at the end, that's not a spoiler, and the way that happens and everything leading up to it is insane. It's so good.
I'm gonna have to put this on my to read list.
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
And, oh, man.
Yeah, It's really good. And then I'm not just saying that because I like know the guy and I'm trying to like defend my friend. No, it's really good.
I love when you can have like, you know, people that are good friends but also put out good content. It's always like,
yes,
like pimping it out way easier.
Oh yeah.
Well, speaking of beautiful love stories, I went to see Love, Simon, which of course is based off of Becky Albertalli's Simon versus the Homo Sapien Agenda on Saturday. I took my mom with me. My mom, aww, like had no, I really, she'd seen the trailer for it and she just thought that it was really, it looked really cute. I think that they did a really good job promoting this movie specifically. The trailer is really great because it really, even though this is like, you know, a gay love story, which is amazing for a teen comedy, basically a teen, oh, yeah, not a teen comedy, a teen dramedy, more like, the trailer really does a good job of kind of marketing the movie for everybody, specifically that point where, you know, they show like all of the people coming out to their parents,
whether I love they're that gay, part so straight much,
or bi. Yeah, it's just so good. And so my mom like thought that that was just like really funny. She was like, yeah, I'll go see that with you. So I took her. And we both cried. And it was so beautiful. And I'm such a big fan of the book. I talked about this when I reviewed it for the show a while back. But my favorite thing about this book was just how it really normalized the experience of coming out. I'm not gay, but I have a lot of friends who are gay, and everybody has had their own experiences in life, and they've been affected by, you know, this idea of having to tell the world who you are and not be afraid to do that. And some of them have had bad experiences and some of them have had good experiences, but it just, I feel like in the past, when you think about these iconic gay characters that we've seen on TV and in movies, like they're all a very specific type of like Hollywood stereotypical gay. And and Simon is not. Simon's a normal boy. And in a lot of ways, he's very similar to people that I've known in my life that I'm really good friends with. And so it was just really lovely to see that portrayed on screen, and just so nice to see such a compelling story normalize the idea of two boys being able to fall in love because, aww, you know, they should be able to fall in love like anyone else. And
damn right, and we should.
I'm so excited for what this movie is going to do. Like, I think that I got more emotional. Like, obviously, like, the story is very emotional, but I'm just so, like, overjoyed for what this movie has the potential to do because it's being marketed not necessarily as a movie for people who are interested in the LGBTQIA plus community, but just marketed to the masses as it should be, you know? Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Did you read the book beforehand or did you go in?
I
as
did.
Like, oh, so how was it compared to the book?
I read the book a while ago, like about maybe like a year or two ago. So it's not super fresh in my mind. I would love to hear from anybody who goes to see it when it comes out, it like wide release in the United States, at least this Friday, March 15th, if you feel like
so
it's
soon,
really accurate. Yes. Yeah, to the book. But I felt like it definitely captured the essence of what Becky wrote, at least for somebody who hasn't read it in a while.
Yeah. Oh, man. That makes me so excited.
You've read the book, right?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my gosh. I feel like you would love it. And
I've stopped reading for, like, years. And, They Both Die at the End was the first book I've read in, like, 2 years straight.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so excited for you to watch this movie. Not just because you yourself are gay, but just because it's so good. But you know, kind of like Black Panther. I feel like Black Panther, like, I think it's a movie for everybody. And you can be impacted by it, regardless of, like, the melanin content in your skin, but if you happen to be black too, it's going to be extra special, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the same with like Love, Simon and other stories that shine a spotlight on minorities, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. If they ever make a movie about a gay Arab, I'm just going to be dying.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's the next frontier. I mean, like, you know? I think that, you know, there's a lot of shitty stuff that's happened in the last few years, but I just really do appreciate that it seems like we've taken a bit of a turn in Hollywood in terms of, you know, telling stories that need to be told and, yeah. and that focus on people that are different, like and, other people, you know?
Yeah. And even if it is just Hollywood doing it because, like, they realize it's the right, like, PR move to do, at least it's steps being done. Like,
I know. It's like, I don't really care why you do it, but just, yeah, like, do it.
But you're doing it anyway. Good. So even though yeah. you're still evil at the heart, I mean, I like the good you're putting out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, when you go see it, I will need a status update.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. 100%.
Yes. Okay. You have one more thing to share in How We Hype.
Yes. Yeah. So I just started my second book, and it's Turtles All the Way Down by John Green. I'm in the middle of it right now, so I haven't finished it just yet, but I love it. And it, like, it made me miss John Green. You know, I didn't even realize how much I missed John Green until I was reading another new John Green book. And it was just, the writing's so good and the characters are well developed, and like seeing into this main character's head, it made me miss John Green a lot because I didn't even realize how much I miss him until I read a new John Green book. And the characters are just really, really well developed, and the conversations that they have are so fluid and normal. Like, it's exactly how I talk to the people I know, and it just made me realize how in tune John Green is with, like, his audience, even if they're not, like, I mean, I'm not a teenage girl, but still, like, even adult men can like John Green books, right?
Like, yeah,
it's
yeah,
not just it's, young you know adult, what? You know?
Yeah, there's adult in there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, so it's really funny because I bought a copy of Turtles All the Way Down, but I haven't had time to read it yet. And I really want to read it soon, but I'm trying to get through A Wrinkle in Time first because that just came out. Ooh, and, you know, yeah. I kind of want, like, to be able to cross-reference and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like it's going to be, like, it's going to feel familiar because it's John Green, but it's also going to be a completely different experience because I think that Turtles All the Way Down will be, like, the first John Green book I've read as an adult, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of trippy.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, early, I mean, because, you know, I guess you could argue, like, after you're 18, you're an adult, but even, like, early 20s, you're still kind of, like, in your teens, you're mm-hmm. kind of growing out of them, oh, yeah. So I feel
people
like
who are, like, 21 are still growing up.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I think that we grow up, like, our whole lives, you
oh, well,
know?
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like, not even, like, physically, but just, like, mentally, but I think it's going to be interesting to see how I relate to the characters now, like, you know, kind of yeah. looking at them differently.
Yeah, with our life experiences and yeah, like the yeah. things that we've learned as adults over time. Like, it's yeah, I feel like that's a really good point, and I really actually want to read like Looking for Alaska or like one of his books that he wrote like first now and see if I like take it a different way or like if I like think about the characters a different way now that they're like they're not so close to me in age. I wonder. Yeah, I wonder if yeah. that would be interesting. I wonder if like that's actually a thing or if that's just how we feel about it.
I know. In a lot of ways, that's why I'm scared to go back to things that I did like really, really love. Like Twilight gets a lot of like hate,
oh,
but
yeah.
I really enjoyed the Twilight books. I haven't read those since, you know, 2008 or like no, later than that. Like whenever like the last movie came out, like that was probably the last time I picked up a Twilight book. But I wonder if it would still feel like the same, like if I would yeah. still feel like that giddy nostalgia or oh, if yeah. it would be tainted by like how I feel now or, you know, mm-hmm. how like the series has been painted over time because of the movies, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's crazy. I haven't read a book since like the last book premiere. Like I went to the midnight premiere for her last book and everyone I knew was excited about it and everyone was like gushing about it. And so now, I mean, like it's just a stereotype. It's almost like Nickelback, you know, like it's just terrible.
That's exactly what it is. I think we've just forgotten why we hate
on yeah, exactly.
things like Nickelback and Stephenie Meyer and Twilight. I mean, you know, but the fact of the matter is there's a reason why both of those things were successful, so.
Oh my gosh.
Oh man, I can't believe we just made a Nickelback and Twilight correlation.
I mean, that's you really know, funny. I mean, I feel like the Twihards are going to tweet at me now, but I'm sorry.
Nah. All right, well, we're going to move into our new segment, and we want to kick things off by talking about the Oscars a little bit. Like I said, you know, we're very well aware that the Oscars happened like a little over a week ago now, but it's still like one of the biggest moments in pop culture every year, and we would be remiss not to talk about them, especially because there were a lot of really big moments that happened this year. The host this year was Jimmy Kimmel, and I don't know if you were able to catch his monologue, Kyle, but I feel like Kimmel in general, like, I'm not the biggest fan of him. Like, I don't know how you feel. Okay.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I just, like, but I do think that I kind of, like, was a little proud that he didn't really hold back. Like, he really addressed some of these big issues head on, including Harvey Weinstein and the very important Me Too Time's Up movement. And I feel like, Jimmy Kimmel 2 years ago probably wouldn't have done that. He might have just, like, beat around the bush a bit. And so it is kind of nice to see that he didn't hold back in that regard. But I just, like, I think as a host, he's very boring, and I'm actually kind of surprised. I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised that they asked him back, because it's kind of a safe bet, but also, like, you know, he's not the most exciting.
Yeah, no. And I don't like the way he uses, like, humor on, like, audience members or, like, people who aren't celebrities. Like, last year's stunt with, like, bringing them into the Oscars, like, I felt, like, so bad for them, and the celebrities, it was just awkward. People were like, what's going on? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And you couldn't tell if he was, like, making fun of them or, like, you know? And then this year, he did it to, like, a huge audience watching A Wrinkle in Time and bringing in celebrities. And I genuinely could not tell if the celebrities were actually picked before this to go or if he was just, like, making them stand up.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of don't think that they were picked beforehand. And I think that you could tell because it was, like, such a weird hodgepodge of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost kind of like, I get why they don't want to go over there, you know, because, like, you know, I think once you get to a certain point in your career, like, you worry about security, but also, like, you're sitting in your seat, you know, like, you're literally
at an award show in, like, probably one of the most expensive pieces of clothing you own, and you have to walk across Hollywood Boulevard to get through the hobos and the impersonators and the fans, and you have to go.
Because I don't unless there's some, like, secret back door that we don't know about, like, we are both pretty familiar with the layout of that area,
and
you can go through the shopping center, but you still have to go through people, and I don't think that they shut it completely down. Maybe they do Oscars.
But they also, like, I feel like they've got to take those barriers down early, because, like, I feel like I've driven past that area, like, the night of the Oscars at, like, 12 a.m. or something, and, like, it was almost all gone. So it's, like, they can't do that in, like, the span of, like, 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, either way, it's just kind of,
It's just awkward, though, no matter what.
Yeah, it is. Somebody made a really good point I saw on Twitter that they were like, oh, I can't believe more people didn't go, like, say thank you to the people that pay for their lifestyle,
Okay.
Not a lie, you know, but also kind of really dramatic because get it. The best thing to come out of that segment was how pure Gal Gadot is.
Goes
in and she's like, hi, I don't know if you know who I am. Gal, you are Wonder Woman. Everybody knows. And this is the right audience for that, because everybody that's there to see A Wrinkle in Time probably has an interest in science fiction.
Oh, yeah.
But it was really cute.
No, yeah, it was really cute. And I really did like this year's Oscars a lot. In terms of just, like, the messages, the positive messages that it had, like, just about the Time's Up movement and Me Too, and also, like, the representation that there was with, like, people who need an American Sign Language, like, not just, like, deaf people, but, like, also, like, mute people because of Shape of Water. Like, I mean, like, that opened my eyes to a whole, like, other subculture of of disabled people. Like, I didn't even think about people who are mute, and I actually helped a mute customer at the Genius Bar 2 days ago, and, like, we had to, like, type everything on an iPad, like, back and forth to one another. So, like, to see the diversity and the representation in this year's Oscars is crazy. It's like such a different Oscars than last year's, like Oscars So White, you know. It's inclusive and it was genuine. Like, you can tell there's a genuine love for inclusivity and diversity because so many people were talking about it.
Yeah, you know, my grandma, who I don't think I've ever talked about this before on the show, but like she and my grandpa actually came over through the second wave of the Bracero program in California. So they came from Mexico to California so that my grandpa could work in the agriculture industry. It was a program that was set up by the government to help the agriculture industry flourish. And it was also beneficial to the migrant workers that came over because they were able to make money, you know? So that's how they got here. But my grandma, you know, like she gave up a lot of her culture to kind of assimilate into American culture and make sure that her kids never felt like they were weird for not understanding things. But I think that like sometimes there's like a really big disconnect between like, you know, American award shows and like the award shows that she watches on like Univision or Telemundo and things like that. But for the first time in like, since I can remember, she called me and she said she was going to watch the Oscars because she heard that there were going to be a lot of Latinos there. And then she called me the next day. She goes, did you count them? She's like, I counted 10. And that was a big deal for her. And that is like, aww. It's kind of funny. And it's also a little bit sad because 10 out of how many, you know, nominees is not very much. But also like, that's the fact that that's a big deal, you know? And my grandma is 75. Like, That means something, you know?
Yeah.
And it means something for not even just, like, the Latino community who, like, man, they turned out for the Oscars and they cleaned up. But also for, like, other people that could finally see themselves, you know, represented, whether that be in Kunal, who was Big Sick, was amazing, or in Jordan Peele's, you know, Get Out. All of that is important. Or even Guillermo del Toro's Shape of Water, like you said, like, centers on a mute woman, like all of that is important. So,
oh yeah, it's amazing how like good It's amazing how many good things there were to come out of this Oscars, like just in terms of representation and messages of like kindness. You know, it was unexpected.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, and then also, like, I'm sure you saw Frances McDormand's acceptance speech, right?
Oh, yeah, I like, absolutely loved it. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I loved
it
so much.
No,
it
was just, like, so amazing.
Yeah. It's, like, yeah, it's so funny.
And then, like, the fact that she was...
Sorry.
Oh, go on. It's okay.
Just, I love the beginning of it when she was just like shaking. She was like, oh, I'm so shaking because I have things to say. And I was just like, yes, girl. Like, just, I knew she was going to bring down the house as soon as she said that. And I was like, so stoked for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like the fact that she was able to get inclusion right or trending. And that's something that we're still talking about right now, like today. A week after, I hope that we still talk about it for, like, months to come. That's really great.
I didn't even, like, realize or know what that was until, like, I saw an article about it. Because I was, like, I saw a lot of people talking about Inclusion Rider, and I didn't know what that was until I read a stupid BuzzFeed article that was just actually informing me what it was. And it's crazy. Like, I didn't know that that was a contractual thing that you can do. And, like, it just makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't know either, really. I don't think anybody really talks about it. Or maybe, like, really super insiders might know. But I think it's important that the general public is aware now. And hopefully, you know, more people follow suit. I did see last week that Michael B. Jordan, who has his own production company, he was announcing via Instagram that he was going to insist that, you know, all projects that come out of that his studio have inclusion writers, and it's a great step in the right direction.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And yeah. I am truly loving the direction that Hollywood is heading right now, and I hope they're not like pulling the wool over our eyes, and it's not nearly as big of a change that's happening as we think it is. But I mean, it looks like people actually care and people are doing the right thing.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. Were you in general like pretty happy with the winners?
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. I didn't even know that there was a what's it called? Oh man, Darkest Hour. I didn't know there was a movie about Winston Churchill coming out, and so I didn't know that that was Gary Oldman mm-hmm. when I saw clips, and that was crazy. And like, oh my gosh, he definitely deserves to win an Oscar. Like, I just feel like Gary Oldman has deserved to win an Oscar for a while now, and so I'm just very happy that he's actually gotten it this year.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he has
I was
before.
Pretty.
I have no, like, Oscar history.
Yeah, it's like a lot of these categories were kind of hard for me because it's like, oh, like I really would like to see this win, but I also would like to see this win, you know? Mm-hmm. Like specifically with like best picture, like I really genuinely loved Shape of Water. Like I really did.
It was so good.
But like I also loved Call Me by Your Name and I also loved Lady Bird, you know? So it was just like, oh man, a lot of these were like, I want you to win, but I don't want you to lose. And
there were so many good movies this year. Mm-hmm. Like all of these Oscar award winning movies, like normally when there are Oscar nominees, at least like two or three of them I have like no interest in seeing whatsoever. But like I wanted to see every single one this year.
Yeah, it was a really good list. And it's I feel like over the past few years, especially since they've expanded the number of nominees that they can receive a nod, there have been a lot of I feel like a lot of the movies that get highlighted at award shows, if that's something you care about, are just more digestible by the general public. Like sometimes it's like too highbrow, you know, in the past, like it, like a lot of the movies have been a little too like highbrow or not of interest to like a lot of people. But I think,
mm-hmm.
a lot of these movies that were nominated, whether they were nominated for Best Picture or they were nominated for Best Screenplay or Adapted Screenplay, like they're general interest movies, you know?
Yeah, they're things that the mass population can very easily get into. Like, it's every single, like, I mean, I'm looking at the list of nominees and number and winners right now, and just like every single name I see on here is like something that several people in my life have been talking about. Like there is barely a title on here that like my friend circle has not talked about. So it was very inclusive this year, or very mm-hmm. Not inclusive, but like I don't know what the word is I'm looking for.
Yeah. Did you I kind of want to wrap this up by talking maybe about like any of our favorite moments that we had. Did you have like a favorite moment from the ceremony?
A favorite moment, I don't know actually. I think it might be, oh yes, no, I do know, it was when the winner of the best short film live action did sign language, because she promised that someone that she would do her speech in sign language, and she talked about like the amount of people like about the deaf community, and it was just beautiful. I think it was awesome. And when the guy next to her decided to do his speech but he didn't do sign language, I was like, oh come on. But I loved that whole segment.
Yeah, that was beautiful. I feel like that's going to make mine look so dinky, but I really liked, I just think that, like, after, like, this, the Oscars are so long that mm-hmm. I think that it really needs something to, like, breathe that second wind that we need, you know, to kind of get through the rest of the award show. So I just really, really loved the combination of Tiffany Haddish and Maya Rudolph.
Oh my God, they were hysterical.
They were so funny.
They were so good.
Somebody put them in a movie to get, like, they're just, oh my, man, they, like, lit up the room.
Oh, yeah.
And Tiffany Haddish is, like, coming off of the best year of her life, and she deserves it, and I'm just so excited to see more of her. And yeah, just her and Maya Rudolph together were magic, and it was just really nice to kind of laugh a little bit because we hadn't been doing very much of that. So,
oh yeah, I totally agree.
That like, was that, definitely one of
I
mine.
I forgot that existed until, and you just mentioned it, and I was like, oh my God, that was probably one of the best moments of the night, hands down.
Yeah, And also, like, all the musical performances, I was very proud mama because Suvion Stevens is now Academy Award nominee Suvion Stevens. And he's like, he makes my indie music loving heart just cry and also sing at the same time. But also the Coco performance was just like so beautiful. Tears, just ugly crying, lots of ugly crying on my end. I think they just like really pulled out all the stops and it was just like so nice. I mean, I feel like I talk about this way too much, but just it means a lot to see your culture represented on a stage that big when it hasn't been before. So it's just really nice to see it get all the love.
Aww.
And they killed me with Gael Garcia Bernal and they killed me with the dancers.
Oh my god.
It was just like, oh, it was so good. It was beautiful.
And that, okay, Remember Me is just like the saddest song in the world.
I know.
It, like, it's not, but it is, but it's, oh,
I know. I really feel like, because I know a lot of people were rooting for Greatest Showman. They had a great performance too. I really like that song. I really enjoyed that movie. And I feel like that's more like commercially like appealing, you know?
I have feelings about that show or that movie.
Really interesting. Ooh, to be continued. I don't think we have time to get into it, but
okay.
That's interesting. But yeah, I just think that like if you haven't seen Coco yet, and you feel like mediocre about Remember Me, I will say that I feel like seeing it in the context of the movie, like as the movie plays out, it just, you'll feel a different way by the time it ends.
180% different.
Yeah. Because when I saw it on the trailer, I was like, cute, you know? But then by the time the movie ends, I'm like, oh my God, you know?
And like, it's so funny because I remember people saying that. And I kept hearing that all the time before I watched the movie, and I was like, why is this, like, what happens? Like, does every parent in this movie die, and then the kid dies? Like, is that another Disney film thing that's happening here?
Typical Pixar.
But, like, when you actually watch it, you will understand, and it is, family feels, oh my gosh. I can't.
Yes. Well, I'm so glad that we were able to talk a little bit about the Oscars, and hopefully that satisfied your Oscars craving if you're still coming down from that high. We are going to move into our news segment now, and I actually have the first story. We have a bit of big Wonder Woman 2 news. Of course, Patty Jenkins and co. are hard at work at Wonder Woman 2 as we speak, and we actually learned just last week that Kristen Wiig has officially signed on to co-star in the sequel alongside Gal Gadot, and she will be playing the big villain in the movie. She's going to be playing a character called Cheetah, and I have not read Wonder Woman comics, and I was writing up this story and also trying to like crash course myself into like who Cheetah is. And I know she's like one of the bigger recurring villains in many iterations of Wonder Woman. So there's really no word yet on what Kristen Wiig's Cheetah is going to be like, but there are a bunch of different variations over time of what Cheetah is and like what Cheetah can do. In one version, Cheetah's real name is Priscilla Rich, and she's a DC debutante who suffers from a split personality. Jeez. In another, she's the alter ego of Barbara Ann Minerva, and she's a British archaeologist who possesses the powers and appearance of a real cheetah. And she also has superhuman speed and strength. And then in another iteration, which I'm pretty sure out of all of them, this is not the one we're going to see, but it's just kind of a little fun fact. In another, she's actually portrayed as a man who is an Argentinian business tycoon named Sebastian Ballesteros. I think that's how you pronounce it. And he actually seeks out the plant god Urskartaga, who is the one that gives Barbara and Minerva her powers too. And he seeks her out in order to assume the powers once possessed by Barbara and Minerva. So lots of different variations, wow, of this villain. And it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with it. you know, how they write it into the plot. And we won't have too much longer to wait. Wonder Woman 2 is set to hit theaters on November 1st, 2019. So kind of makes sense that we're getting this big casting news now.
Yeah, they got a lot of work to do.
I know. So what do you think about... I feel like people like love Kristen Wiig, but then some people don't really care for her. How do you feel about this?
I love Kristen Wiig. I don't know how I feel about Kristen Wiig in a Wonder Woman movie. Because it's... Okay, I know DC hasn't really done, like, the whole, like, comedic superhero thing, have they? Like, I don't think... I think all of their superhero movies have been super dark and serious. But, like, I'm wondering if they're gonna go about, like, the Thor 3 route. Or, yeah, it was, like, 3 that's out right now, or just came out. That was really, really hysterical, but still a superhero movie. Like, I don't know. Are they going to do a comedic Wonder Woman, or are they just going to do another badass Wonder Woman? I don't know. I can't tell.
It's going to be interesting to see what they do with this. And it'll just be kind of interesting. I mean, Kristen Wiig, since she left SNL, she's really kind of showcased that she doesn't necessarily just do comedy. She did Walter Mitty, where it was like a bit more of a serious role. Also Skeleton Twins with Bill Hader. I thought that was really interesting because there were some funny moments, but it also got like super deep. So she definitely doesn't shy away from drama, but this is also kind of wading in different waters for her because she's never really done like superhero stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't think I've ever really seen her do action either.
Yeah, I didn't know she did any dramas. Like, I'm just so used to her being on SNL. I guess I'm, like, just an SNL super fan. but if she's done dramas before and, like, she has the experience, and I definitely think she probably could do it. I mean, weren't people kind of the same way when Elizabeth Banks was cast as the Power Rangers villain? Like, people were like, ooh, what? And then she did a really, really fan-friggin-tastic job.
Yeah, I loved that. I really hope we get a second one of that. Like, not that that has anything to do with Wonder Woman, but I just really enjoyed Power Rangers movie. So.
Oh, yeah. It was so good.
Yeah, I liked it more than I thought I was going to like it. And I feel like I had high hopes for Wonder Woman, but it was the same with Wonder Woman. Like, I liked it even more than I thought I was going to. So I'm really excited for the second installment of the series.
Same. I'm sure Kristen Wiig is going to do great. So the second story of the day is going to be about Christopher Robin. I cannot wait for this movie. So Disney released the trailer for the Christopher Robin movie that's about Christopher Robin as an adult meeting Pooh again. And it like was a teaser trailer, so it wasn't very long, but it was so cute seeing Winnie the Pooh just like hop up behind like Christopher Robin's bench. And like he looks... like the classic Winnie the Pooh teddy bear, like the actual teddy bear. So like I was half expecting him to be like round and adorable and like animated, but he wasn't. And I'm very happy he wasn't because he's so much cuter as like an actual little stuffed bear. Did you see the trailer?
Oh my God. Yeah. Look. I did not know how I felt about a live action Winnie the Pooh because I just thought it was kind of, I don't know. I didn't know how I was going to feel about this. When we got the synopsis, I think like everybody, I was like, so it's Hook, but for Christopher Robin, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't think I was going to feel things when I saw the trailer, but like as soon as Winnie the Pooh starts speaking, it's like it got me. Like that voice, it's like the voice of your childhood. It tugged at my heartstrings more than I thought it was going to. And it's just so, there's something about Winnie the Pooh that's just so sweet, you know?
Oh yeah.
And so familiar in a lot of ways for a lot of, you know, children that grew up with it, whether that be the books or the Disney iteration. But yeah, it's just like, oh, it just looks like it's going to be so sweet. I feel like I'm already crying.
I know, right?
Then he says like your face is cracked a bit or something. Like,
oh yeah, oh no, cracked. It's just like, a few wrinkles. And I was like,
it was just so sweet.
It's gonna be
I'm getting
so good.
Soft in my older age, guys.
And this is just the teaser everything. Trailer. Imagine how emotional we're gonna get when the actual trailer comes out.
I know. It just, like, it was one of those, like, I really didn't think I was gonna have, like, you know, any kind of reaction to this whatsoever, because out of all of the, we're getting so many live action Disney movies, out of all the ones we're gonna get, this is, like, as much as I love Winnie the Pooh, big part of my childhood, this was not gonna be at the top of my list ever. I didn't think it was going to.
Mm-hmm.
But I really thought the trailer was super sweet and super charming.
You know, it's really weird. I was just thinking about, like, the whole live action fad that's happening right now, and I'm thinking about it and I'm like, man, I hate that I'm an adult during the live action fad and not, like, the actual golden renaissance in, like, the 90s. Like, I wish I was an adult in the 90s when all of, like Aladdin and Pocahontas and, like, all those, like, classic movies were coming out, because I appreciate movies so much more now as an adult. And so, like, to have been an adult when those were actually coming out and, like, not just a kid that was just like, wee, movies, like, I hate that I have to deal with the reality that live action remakes are what our golden age is right now. Does that make any sense?
It does, because there's a certain kind of late. It's hard because I don't want to say that CGI does not, like, is easy by any means, but there's something different about seeing people animate. You know, like, I remember, I'm sure you remember too, because we both grew up as, like, big Disney kids. Anytime you would bring home a VHS, you'd get that sneak peek of the next project Disney was working on. And just to see, like, the animators, like, having to draw these figures again and again and again, no copy paste in sight, you know, it's just like the amount of work that it took to put, you know, to make those. It's just, it's kind of like a lost art, because we don't really get a lot of animated movies anymore.
Yeah. And I wish I just could, like, appreciate that more as an adult. I mean, I appreciate it now, but, like, I wish those movies were given as much appreciation as movies are given today. Because movies were not nearly of a big deal way back when. Like, people barely cared about when people were filming something, or, like, when someone was cast in a movie. Like, people were like, whatever, like, okay, give me the movie. And now everyone is involved from every moment of, like, script making to selling and rights and casting. And, like, it's crazy the amount of attention movies get nowadays compared to back then. And I wish the Golden Age movies got that much attention. But I know that's a really weird tangent to go on, but yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, like, and there are some, like, gems, like, we've talked before about how amazing Jon Favreau's The Jungle Book was. I was so pleasantly surprised by that. I'm really excited about The Lion King. Not so sure how I feel about things like Dumbo, you know? So it's kind of like, it's a hit and miss for me. But that's the great thing about trailers, is sometimes you think to yourself, like, as these movies are in production, like you said, like, every time you see a headline, you're like, oh, here we go again. And then you see what it could be, and you're like, okay, maybe that's not so bad. But I tend to err on the side of optimism in general for things. I feel like you're the same way. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Especially with, like, Disney. Like, I think that there are some Disney movies I prefer more than others, but in general, like, I don't think I've ever seen, like, a bad Disney movie. Maybe, like, the Cars.
Oh, God, yeah,
like,
Cars.
Could have stopped after. But that's, like, Pixar, too, you know? So, that doesn't really count. Okay, well, speaking of things that made me super emotional on the Disney front, we also got, during the Oscars, actually, a first look at Mary Poppins Returns. This trailer, oh man, Kyle, it really messed me up.
Oh my gosh. Every single moment in this trailer is emotional.
This trailer, okay, like Winnie the Pooh, like, there are, like, three touchstones in my childhood. You know, like early childhood. One is Winnie the Pooh, one is Wizard of Oz, and the other one is Mary Poppins. And to this day, if I'm having, like, a really, really bad day, like, really, really bad, I'll bust out the Mary Poppins and the Wizard of Oz sometimes back to back. It's just, there's something so comforting to me about that.
Yeah.
So And just like, even like with Saving Mr. Banks, I think that's why I was so excited for that, because, you know, it's still like kind of like an iteration of something that I love so much. And so Mary Poppins Returns, just to kind of like see a teaser for this. And like, as soon as that movie started and like the wind started coming in, mm-hmm. there's so many little nods to the original movie, not just the kite, but like Mrs. Banks Votes for Women ribbon is still on that kite, that old kite. And like, and then like Lynn's face just pops up, and like Lin-Manuel Miranda also makes me very emotional, but just like, it's just so good. Like, they have the bridge from the Jolly Holiday with Mary like jumping into the park picture scene. Like, there's so many little nods to the original movie, and like, oh my god, it just, tears.
I know.
I feel like I cry over everything now.
You can tell that like they're making this movie with like an like a love for the original, and they like are not just doing it for like the money of it. Like, the people behind it are actually into the story and its origins, and I think it's gonna make it an awesome, awesome movie. Like, it just looks so good. And okay, Emily Blunt as Mary Poppins is amazing. She looks phenomenal.
She looks really good. Ben Whishaw is in this too. I love him. And oh, he's God. He's playing Michael Banks, like a grown-up Michael Banks. Oh,
yes. Also,
not in the teaser, but like, I know that Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke are both making, you know, cameos in this. Like, that's gonna mess me up in the theater.
Oh my God, like, no way.
Actually, do you want to hear a really embarrassing story?
Yes, always.
So when I first moved to LA, I know you know this, I moved to intern at a magazine, right? And there was one day when they were like, oh, like, we think that we might need you to go do a red carpet, but we're not sure. And I was like, okay, like, this is something that would happen. Like, I would come into the office at 10. I would usually like work till like, you know, if it was like a full day at the office, until 6 or 7. But if they needed me to go do something, like, you know, you cut the day at 3 and like go do the event. And they're like, yeah, we're not sure if our like red carpet girl's going to be able to make it, so we just wanted to know like if you can do it tonight. I'm like, yeah, sure, I can do it. What is it? And they're like, oh, it's Saving Mr. Banks, and we're not sure who else is going to be there, but like, we know that Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke are going to be there. And I was like,
oh my God.
Oh my God. And then my supervisor looked at me, because like my heart started racing just thinking about this. And she goes, are you crying? my eyes like started watering. And they're like, are you okay? And I was like, I'm fine. It's just Dick Van Dyke and Julie Andrews are like national treasures. And we're so lucky to still have them around. And like, I like almost lost it in front of like really important people at this office, just because like I actually didn't end up covering that red carpet, but like for 5 minutes, I was freaking out.
That's phenomenal. That's so amazing.
That is like, you know, that is how much Mary Poppins means to me. Clearly, I'm way too attached and sentimental over things that I grew up with. But yeah, no, this movie looks really, really great, and I'm so excited to see it. They also put out a new poster for it. You can check all that out on Hypeable.com. And the movie comes out this coming holiday season.
Woo!
It's going to be in theaters just in time for Christmas. I'm so excited.
Oh my God, this Christmas is going to be a good Christmas.
I know.
Oh my gosh. All right. So moving on to some TV news. One of my favorite Netflix shows just got renewed for another season. And no, it's not Sense8. I'm sorry. But I'm talking about Black Mirror. It got renewed for a fifth season, because the fourth season, was embraced by everyone. People loved season 4. Like, did you watch the fourth season, Pam?
I'm slowly making my way through it.
Oh,
the thing
about
Black Mirror is that it's like, it's so scary, because everything I 100% believe is probably going to happen at some point. So I kind of have to take it in small doses, because it's a pretty intense show, but it's so good.
Oh yeah. It's very intense. Like, especially if you don't like a bunch of like suspense and murder and dark tones, and you can't take a lot of it all at once. And then, yeah, it can definitely take a while to get through, but season 4 was so good and creative, and just really well done, and it's going to be interesting seeing how they're going to move on, because season four and three were actually both ordered at the same time when Netflix got it, and so they split it up into 6 episodes each. It was like an order for 12 episodes, and so they decided to split it between the two seasons. So season five, no one knows if they're going to order another 12 and maybe do that for season five, or order 12 and then complete and do the same thing and do season six, like, more immediately after season five. Does that make sense?
It does. I've noticed, actually, that this is a new pattern that Netflix is rolling out. The first time I ever saw them do it was actually with Fuller House. Season three, I think.
Really?
They released like 9 episodes. Yeah. And then everybody was like, oh, that was kind of short, but okay. And then like a few months later, they're like, oh, by the way, like, we've got like X more episodes, and they're going to drop on December 22nd. So that was like season 3B. And I want to say I heard that they were going to do it with another show, and now they're doing it with Black Mirror, which I guess it kind of makes, maybe, I can't really tell if it makes sense, honestly. I guess they get double the hype, you know,
yeah,
throughout the year or whatever, but it kind of sucks for fans because you have to wait, you know,
yeah,
especially for a show that, I know that Black Mirror is really great because you can technically watch episodes as standalones, but for a lot of other shows, it kind of sucks because you have like the equivalent of that mid-season finale, mm, and you have to wait so long for the rest.
Oh my gosh. Don't even talk to Sense8 fans about that, man.
I know.
Like, we have been jaded with our cliffhangers and the amount of time it takes to go between one cliffhanger and the resolution and then another cliffhanger. It's ridiculous. But yeah, I'm very excited for Black Mirror Season 5. I'm sure it's going to be really, really good. And I can't wait to see what screwed up stuff they have to deal with.
So do we have a release date for that yet? Or do you think it's just going to come back within the year? Like the whole Netflix stuff?
Yeah, it's just going to come back at some point in the next 2019. No, 2018. The fall of 2018, maybe.
Looks okay. Like.
Yeah.
That's kind of close by.
That's when season four hit us. So season five, okay, happening at that time makes sense.
Gotcha. Yeah, Netflix is like, man, they're cranking these shows out. And I love it because they have such great programming. But yeah, fun stuff.
Yep.
So we have a little bit more TV news. We're actually moving over into network television. And I feel like you'll be excited for one part of this, if not both parts. Did you ever watch a little show called Roswell back in the 90s or like later when it hit Netflix?
I have no idea what Roswell is. And I did not.
Kyle, I feel like you would love it.
I read this news story and I read the synopsis of the show and I was like, I'm sorry, what? Is this like, I'm like, what? What is the show? I don't get it.
So we have a little bit of Roswell casting news for you guys, and it's good news for fans of The Vampire Diaries, because we just found out that Michael Trevino, who was Tyler, right? That was his name. Tyler Lockwood? Yeah, that's right.
Lockwood,
it's been a while. Tyler Lockwood. Vampire Diaries alum Michael Trevino has officially been cast in the CW's Roswell reboot. So we've talked a lot about Roswell on this show before because Selena and I are super fans of this show. We were both very much into it back in the day when it was airing on then the WB/UPN. And as we've said before, the original iteration of this show centered around 3 teenagers who were secretly aliens. Kevin Heigl actually played one of the teenagers,
what?
By the way.
No
yeah.
way.
Yeah. And there was also, there were like, obviously, like, they were hiding in secret in Roswell, New Mexico, trying to keep a low profile and make sure that nobody knew that they were aliens until Max decides to save Liz, who is played by Shiri Appleby, in a very Twilight-esque way, but before Twilight was a thing. So she gets shot in the diner that she's working in, and Max can't help but save her because he's kind of been loving her from afar for a very long time. Mm. And he uses his alien powers to save her from the gunshot wound that would have killed her.
Oh my God.
And after that, he can't really hide who he is. And they kind of just like start falling in love, and she gets roped into this whole thing. And while this is all happening, she's kind of hanging out with this guy named Kyle Valenti, who is the son of the sheriff in the original show. He's also the son of the sheriff in the new show, but we'll get to that in a minute. I'm just kind of catching you up.
Oh my gosh.
So the sheriff is kind of like always on these teenage aliens' coattails. He's like chasing them down. He knows something fishy's going on, and he's kind of like the big bad in this whole thing, because they know if they get caught, then he's going to send them to go get tested on and stuff like that. And in the new iteration of Roswell, which has been ordered to pilot, it's actually going to be directed by Julie Plec. The pilot's going to be directed by Julie Plec. Mm. So kind of like a fun little Vampire Diaries reunion there between Plec, who was the showrunner, and Michael, who obviously starred in the series. Everybody's kind of an adult. Liz is coming back to Roswell as an adult to move back home with her parents, who happen to be undocumented immigrants, or illegal aliens, if you will. She runs into Max, who's also older, and Max is now a police officer, but he's a real alien, and he's hiding that secret. So you have, you know, probably this whole storyline going on where she's the daughter of illegal immigrants, or undocumented immigrants, and he's a guy just trying to keep his secret. Michael is going to be playing Kyle Valenti, who is the son of the sheriff. And in the show, he was kind of a bit of a butthead, honestly, like in the beginning. I think he gets better as the show goes on, if I remember correctly. But pretty good role for Michael Trevino, because Tyler Lockwood also is like not a very easy character to stomach. He doesn't always do the right thing, and he's like a little bit selfish. Yeah. Huh. So it kind of makes sense, I feel like, if Julie had a hand in helping, you know, like kind of toss out names out there, that she would think that Michael would do a good job. But he's a great actor, so it'll be fun to see what he does with this. It's fun to see him to come back to the CW. The CW is pretty good about giving, you know, alums chances on other shows. So.
Yeah, they have a lot, like, it's like a little, like, network of, like, celebrities that just, like, work CW projects.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I feel like, Roswell, like, now, because it's a little bit dated, probably a little bit hokey, but I feel like you might enjoy it. It's only 3 seasons long.
Yeah, it seems very interesting. I'll give it a shot. Only because it was on the WB, and the WB was the home of my favorite show on this planet, Charmed.
Yes. So,
I mean, it feels like they were out around the same time. So
yes, yeah.
So
yeah.
I will definitely give it a shot.
Or maybe you like the reboot. Like, maybe the reboot might be interesting. I really think that, like, it's different for... And actually, we have somebody that wrote in about the Charmed reboot, so maybe you can chime in when we get to that. But with Roswell specifically, I think that just because the original kind of, like, very tongue-in-cheek, every once in a while jokingly referred to them as illegal aliens, it is kind of like an interesting twist for them to actually bring that reality into the mix. And if it's done right, I feel like it could potentially shine a spotlight on a very important issue right now. So we'll see how we get on. At the end of the day, it's also still a CW show, so I'm expecting a little bit of steam mixed in with the drama, and also hopefully like some good plot. So
I'm intrigued. I'll definitely give it a shot for sure. Okay. And then the last story of the day is going to be, I think, something that I've been looking forward to a lot, and that is the Harry Potter mobile game, Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery, and they opened pre-registrations for Google Android users. But if you go online to their website, even if you don't have an Android, you can pre-register using your email. And they released a trailer for it, and the trailer just looks amazing. Like, it was a couple of shots of like classes at Hogwarts, like potions and like just I can't talk about it because I'm too excited about it. Like my mind is running a million miles a minute thinking about all the amazing things that are going to happen with this game. I'm definitely going to download it. Are you going to download it? Like, you have to.
No.
No?
I want to say no, but I feel like I will because curiosity will get the better of me. I'm a little bit more excited about this proposed Pokemon Go, but for Fantastic Beasts that we were maybe promised a while ago.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's more up my alley, but I think that the idea of this is really cool. I think it's just a matter of how it's executed, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely.
Because it's basically like Sims, but for Hogwarts, kind of, maybe.
Mm, yeah. Oh, that's a good point. I don't know. I saw it more as like a fun classes at Hogwarts type thing, but maybe it's probably because like it reminds me a lot of this is gonna sound so geeky. It reminds me of when I would role play like online, like do like text based role play.
Yes.
And there were a couple of like also virtual role plays that had like people who had built a virtual Harry Potter, and like you have a little avatar and you go and like talk to people and like you go to class and there'd be like a chat room and the class would have like an actual teacher like who was part of the staff of the website who gave actual homework that you had to like actually do and turn in the next time you played. Like it was amazing. And so when I think of this game, that game pops into my head, and so I'm just biased, and I think that's probably what I'm thinking it's going to be, and it's going to be nothing like that.
I feel like your RPG was way more advanced than the ones that I tried to play. That sounds very immersive. I'm very impressed.
I know. The corner
of the internet you were dwelling in.
I know. I don't know how I found it, but it was the best Harry Potter corner of all time.
I think I was too busy writing fan fiction. Really bad fan fiction. Oh my gosh. So when does this game come out, like, to the masses if you don't pre-register?
So it says it's going to be available later this year. So at some point.
All right. Tentatively mark my calendar.
Yeah, right?
I wonder if they'll time it for the release of Fantastic Beasts 2. That would probably make sense. So that actually does it for this week's news. I feel like we covered like a lot, though. We had a lot of really fun stories, and you know, we'll be back next week with another set of news stories. We're going to head straight into our TV show of the week segment. This is, of course, when we tell you what we have been watching lately. And Kyle, I'm gonna let you go first. This is one of my favorite shows of last year.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so for some reason, the only TV that I'm watching right now is just Miss Marvelous Miss Maisel on Amazon, like on repeat. I think I just watched it through for the second time, and I started the third go like yesterday. And I just love it so much. And if you haven't heard about it somehow in the time that it's come out, it's won an Emmy, like the main actress in it won an Emmy for her performance. And it's from the writers of Gilmore Girl, writer of Gilmore Girls, and it has the same exact type of dialogue like that you'd expect from a Gilmore Girls show, and it's so snippy or snappy and like witty and quick, and I just love everything about it, and I love the character, like, because it's about this woman in the 50s whose husband does stand-up comedy and kind of sucks at it, has actually been using some other comedian's act, and then he asks her for a divorce, and like her perfect little like 50s like housewife lifestyle kind of like burns to ashes, and she gets drunk and she goes to the comedy club that he performs at and just starts talking about him, and we realize that she's an amazing comedian herself, and it's just about her like her story and her arch or her wow, I can't talk today. It's about her journey through becoming a stand-up comic. Wow, I ranted for a long time about that. I'm sorry. I'm just in love with the show, okay?
I love this show so much. it's just so, it's so good. And she's all the actors are so good in this, and it just makes you feel good. Like, even though it kind of like Midge's whole like trajectory on the series is kind of born out of this awful thing that happens to her, like, I don't know, it kind of just makes you feel optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are ups and downs, but it just makes you feel like she's just a whirlwind, and it just makes you feel like you can do anything, because yeah, she is like just, she's taking life by the horns.
Yeah, she is. Like I mean, a lot of people would just kind of like, I mean, I know if that happened to me, I would just kind of like fall on the ground and not want to get up and not want to do anything. But like, she's so badass, and like, she stands up for herself, and like, she's just one of the best women characters on TV, I think. Like, one of many.
You know, yes. And I think that I want to say, if you haven't seen this show yet, like, you really should. It's worth your time. But also, I'm not sure if it's still available, but for a while after they won some well-deserved Golden Globes, Amazon was actually making it free to watch to celebrate the wins.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah. So if that's still available, you know, take advantage of that. And if it's not and you haven't used your Amazon Prime trial yet, you can totally binge through this super easy. Like, once I got started, I couldn't stop. I was so...
yeah,
enthralled by it. So,
and the cast definitely of this is amazing. The cast, mm-hmm, is phenomenal. Tony Shalhoub as like an old like Jewish like dad is hysterical. Absolutely hysterical.
Yeah, and just seeing like the way that everybody kind of like maneuvers their way around each other and stuff like that, it's just so great. Highly recommend. I'm so glad that you've enjoyed it and that you've seen it. It's so good. So I want to talk a little bit about NBC's new music drama, Rise. This Ooh. Is actually premiering on, they have a special sneak preview premiere on Tuesday, March 13th, and then it officially premieres on March 20th. So you'll be able to watch the pilot very, very soon, maybe even before you listen to this episode. And it's very Glee meets... somebody said Glee meets Smash. Definitely very Glee meets Friday Night Lights, which makes sense because Jason Kadams, who, you know, also was a showrunner for Friday Night Lights, is also the showrunner on Rise. If you're a fan of Glee...
Wasn't this, like, I thought something like this came out last year. I could have sworn. Like, I heard about this last year, but it's not, it hasn't come out yet?
Mm-mm, it hasn't come out yet.
Oh, okay.
If you're a fan of, like, Jason as a showrunner, or if you really like musical theater-related shows, like, you know, specifically Glee, because it is very reminiscent of that with, like, the quiet but very talented, unpopular girl getting the lead in the musical across from the football player who's never really wanted to be in the arts but can sing and act, then, like, this is going to be a show for you. I will say that, well, first of all, I should say that it's based on a book, which is based on a true story. I think it's called Broadway High. That's the name of the book. And I can't remember your name. I'm so sorry. But one of our listeners actually tweeted at me when I mentioned that I had seen the show, because I've actually seen the whole first season. NBC kindly sent over 9 screeners, which never happens.
Wow.
So I've seen the whole first season. And I will say that it kind of, for me, gets off to a bit of a rocky start. But it kind of, like, starts hitting its stride, and it makes you care about some of the storylines that are going on. Like I was saying before, one of our listeners tweeted at me when I said that I'd watched this, and I can't remember your name. I'm so sorry. So I'm trying to, like, frantically look through Twitter, but it's not working. Anyway, thank you so much for tweeting me, because she actually mentioned that in the book, the teacher who takes over the musical theater department kind of, like, sweeps the rug under the current musical theater director at the school, because he really, really wants to spearhead that project. He's played by Josh Radnor, and his name is Lou. In the book, like, that's based on a real story, he was, like, a closeted gay man, and that was a really big part of his identity. He's seemingly straight. I don't know if they're going to play around with that later, but in the first season, at least, he's pegged as a family man, and his family has its own set of problems, but he's definitely not gay unless, like, it's a deep, deep, you know, closeted situation where it's going to come out in, like, 5 seasons or something. But, like, definitely not getting that vibe there. And I totally understand why that's a problem, because you've basically changed who this person is. And she also linked me, this listener, to an article that came out of Upfronts this year, where Jason, the showrunner, said that he changed the character to just be a little bit more relatable to him as a writer.
Oh, okay. I heard about this. Yes, I heard about this, and I thought it was just a bunch of bull stuff. Like,
yeah,
what the
yeah.
heck? It, like, I'm sorry. Like, I can identify perfectly fine to all the straight guys I watch on TV. I'm sorry, you apparently cannot identify at all to a single gay person you watch. Like,
yeah.
What? That sounds more like a personal problem.
That's a really shitty excuse. Like, there's no, like, way to go around that. And that really, really sucks. But I will say that, like, unfortunately, that aside, the show actually does a really good job of highlighting a storyline with a particular character who is very, very religious and is grappling with his sexual identity. There's also a trans student. It's a female-to-male trans student, and they kind of dive into that. Overall, I think that the first season has a few little bumps. It's not, like, a completely smooth ride, but it's still, like, if you're interested in that kind of stuff, it's worth your time to watch and see if you're into it. But I will say that it's very unlikely, I think, especially if you're, like, highly critical of shows, that you're going to be hooked based on the pilot alone, because there's a lot of moving parts going on. And it almost kind of feels like they're trying to fit too much story into, like, one episode. I think it was way more easier for me to stomach because I had all 9 episodes and I could, like, watch all of them. And also because the entire story kind of centers around the drama department putting on a production of Spring Awakening, which I'm a huge fan of. That musical is fantastic.
Oh, I love that musical so much. Wait, they...
Yeah, that
okay,
definitely
so
hooked
they're putting
me
on.
In.
They're putting on Spring Awakening in the show? Yeah. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
The last time a TV show was about, like, a TV show had a bunch of high school kids putting on Spring Awakening was 90210.
Yeah, I remember that, and it was awful.
Oh my god.
All they did was keep singing Mama Who Bore Me. They don't just sing that song, by the way.
Okay, good.
They get into, like, Totally Fucked and My Junk and Touch Me and, like, all of these great musical numbers. Huge, huge fan of Spring Awakening. Definitely a major reason why I watched, like, I kept watching because I was there for those
musical
moments.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. You just made me way more excited for the show.
Yeah, but it like, at the end of the day, like, I did want to address, like, the controversy surrounding this show, because I haven't really seen a lot of outlets put that out there since, like, the screeners were out, and I'm really appreciative of the person that tweeted me and, like, made me aware of that, because it's something that we should know. It's something that should probably be highlighted a little bit more, and, yeah, I mean, like, it's kind of unfortunate. Like, I don't know if anybody's gonna talk about it more, but it is unfortunate that, you know, maybe that's something that people that were, you know, fans of the book or really are familiar with the original story that that the book tells are not going to see that on a TV show. But at the same time, like, there is representation on this show, too. So it's kind of like a weird catch 22. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like, does the misrepresentation
just, like,
here,
one,
like, counteract, like, all the other representation, or what's, like, it's tough.
Yeah, it is really tough, and I didn't want to, like, I feel like I can get into a little bit more now because the show's about to premiere, but, like, a week ago or 2 weeks ago when I was tweeting about this, it was like, oh, I don't really want to talk about it because it's, like, nearing on spoiler territory, but I do think it's important for you guys to know that while one man's identity was erased for the sake of telling a fictional TV show, you know, like, creating a fictional TV show, the show doesn't necessarily erase all identity. Mm-hmm. So it's just really weird. It's a really weird situation. But yeah, like, if you tune in, let me know what you think. Like I said, I definitely, like, started off for the Spring Awakening, and by the end, I was really, really invested in a few storylines here. So there is, like, some good, but there are also a lot of, like, jagged edges, if that makes sense. Like, it's not a smooth first season by any means, in my opinion. So.
Oh, well, I'm very excited to see how it turns out.
Yeah, yeah. You'll have to let me know how you like it. Maybe you'll stay for the Spring Awakening too and then fall in love with other aspects.
Yes, I hope so. Yes.
So we have a bit of listener feedback, as always, this week. And just in case you forgot, I'm going to run through the contact information very quickly one more time. You can always reach us via Twitter at HypeableHype if you have, like, shorter comments. Actually, all of our listener feedback this week is coming from Twitter, so it's a great way to get a hold of us, and we love featuring your thoughts on this show, so please reach out in any way. But, you know, we're pretty active on Twitter, so it's a great way to get a hold of us on there. And then if you have rather lengthy comments, you can leave them for us in the show notes on hypeable.com, or you can email us. Our email address is hype@hypeable.com. So we're going to run through some tweets. I'm going to take the first one, and then Kyle and I are going to alternate. First tweet comes from Emmy Foss, who says, listening to episode 179, Charm Talk, and I was a huge fan, and my problem is that the reboot is so far from the original. I'm all for the new diversity and the LGBT, but I just wish they were Hallowells. I wanted the original plot with new, more diverse people. So, Kyle, you are, like, the biggest Charmed super fan I know, and I really would love to hear what you have to think about, like, what you have to say about this whole situation, but also specifically how you feel. Yeah, and if you agree with Emmy.
Oh my gosh, I agree so much. I agree 110% with Emmy. Like, I grew up with this show. This is the first show that I ever, like, was an actual fan of. And it was amazing. And, I mean, granted, I watch it now as an adult and I realize how, like, cheesy and ridiculous and campy it is. But it's so good because of the magic and the fiction and the storytelling. Like, these sisters and this family are so well, like, rounded, and the stories are amazing, and so it has a very special place in my heart. And when I heard that there's going to be a reboot, I was kind of excited but also really hesitant, because I didn't know whether they meant, like, reboot, like what they're doing with Roseanne or Fuller House or something, or if they were just gonna kind of change everything. And they're definitely going the latter out, and I hate it, because at this point, the show that they're creating is not Charmed. It shouldn't be titled Charmed, because it just is in the same world as that universe, but it's not about the Charmed ones, like, as we know them. Like, they're creating entirely new characters. It's not even, like, a continuation of the original story at all. It's just, like, a complete reboot and, like, retelling of the story, and I don't like it. I was hoping for something where, like, we'd see the actual Charmed ones, like, kids, like, growing up in the manor and doing their fighting, because, like, they would be our age, and so, like, we would be able to, like, identify better with, like, a cast of characters that we actually grew up with, like, having known, like, that was Phoebe's son or that was Phoebe's daughter, like, you know, like, that would have been so much more compelling as an audience viewer myself than casting a bunch of girls as, I guess, the Charmed ones, but, like, they're not even the Halliwell sisters. Like, if it's not about the Halliwells, it's not about Charmed.
Very, very interesting. So you were much more probably invested when the reboot was proposed to take place in the 70s, right?
Oh, yeah. If it was about, like, Grams and her story, then yeah. Because that would have been, like, about the same set of characters. And, like, you're actually kind of adding to the world instead of trying to rewrite it.
Mm-hmm. That's a really valid point. And I know you had more thoughts about this, right? And you wrote about it.
Oh, yes, yes. Thank you for reminding me. I actually did write about my opinions in a more, like, in-depth way if you guys want to read about it over at thatsnormal.com, and that's -normal.com. And there will probably be a link in the show notes if you want to go over to them. If you think you're gonna like the Charmed reboot, please tweet at me and tell me why, because I'm not excited about it at all.
Well, there you go. You can tweet Kyle for all the Charmed feels, and you guys can commiserate together.
Yes, please do it.
Do you want to get the next tweet from Tucker?
Yeah, absolutely. So Tucker says, did anybody see Wrinkle in Time? I haven't seen it yet. I have not seen it yet either. I hear that it's amazing, but I also hear that it's terrible, which scares me.
What? Oh, no.
You know? Yeah. Did you hear about those?
No, I haven't heard that it's terrible. I love Ava so much. I really hope it's not terrible.
Oh, my gosh. Entertainment Weekly came out with the review and was like, oh, my gosh.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Who did it? Hold on. I need to know. I just need to know. I'm such a nosy person.
Oh, no. I mean, that's totally fair. Wow. Who are you?
I don't know, Darren.
Okay. It's a disappointing mess.
That's crazy. I'm only like barely halfway through the book. So I don't know if like maybe they're coming at it from that angle. I haven't seen anything but like praise for it. So we'll see.
Yeah. From what I hear is, book readers are not going to like it as much as non-book readers, because I think they changed some stuff. I mean, they changed stuff in every movie from a book adaptation, but apparently the stuff they changed really upset people. So I don't know what that is, but that's what I'm hearing.
All right. Well, Tucker, we're going to put a pin in A Wrinkle in Time, and I'm going to try and see it before we record the next episode and give you guys my thoughts. I don't know when it's coming out in Denmark. Probably not for another 100 years.
Yeah, right. Oh, poor Selena.
Poor Selena. I was I was talking about how I went to see Love, Simon, and like so many of our listeners abroad were like, we're not getting it till June. I'm like, oh no, that's awful. It really sucks. Laura Morrow also tweeted us and said, I have massive fandom issues. I am watching the Defenders series. I have not seen Luke Cage or Iron Fist, but I kind of adore the actors who play them. Now I want to watch Iron Fist, but I've heard so many bad things. I have not seen Iron Fist. I'm really bad with the Marvel series on Netflix, you guys. Like, I'm awful. I know that Donya, who is amazing and also writes for Hypeable and has been on this show before, she actually had a really detailed article about the controversy surrounding Iron Fist, so I totally understand why people were upset about that. I cannot give my opinion one way or the other because I haven't seen it, and I probably will not get around to it for a while. So, have you seen it?
Yeah. Unfortunately, no. I've heard terrible things about Iron Fist, and I'm not, like, huge into the Defender series. Like, I don't think I've seen the second season of Daredevil. But I have seen Jessica Jones, which I thought was fantastic, and I have seen a couple others, but yeah, I can't talk about the Defender series. I'm sorry.
Well, Laura also tweeted that she watched Jessica Jones, and she said, so I forgot my love for Jessica Jones and I'm watching it now. I'm still impressed. I can't wait for season 2. And Life Sentence with Lucy Hale is about to come out. So she actually tweeted me later and said that she had finished Jessica Jones season 2 and was pretty hyped about it. So I feel like the internet in general is really, ooh, really pleased with season 2.
I forgot that came out.
There you go.
Oh, something else excited for you to binge. Okay.
I will say I did start watching the pilot for Life Sentence with Lucy Hale. It's on the CW. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really grab my attention. I think I turned it off after like 20 minutes, honestly. But maybe I'll come back to it. If you have seen it and you like me, please tweet me and let me know why and convince me to watch the rest of it, please. Because I love Lucy Hale. Big fan of hers. Loved her in Pretty Little Liars. Would like to watch this show, but it just didn't grab me. So.
Oh, all right. So Ningzi tweeted us and said, or us, or you guys, tweeted hype, hey, and said, I started one day at a time last night, and now I cannot stop watching. Why was I not warned that this show will make me laugh and cry in equal measures? This show is great, ladies. Thank you for the recommendation. I actually also just started this on my lunch break like 3 days ago, and I really liked the first episode, and I heard great things about the rest of it, and so your tweet just makes me even more excited to finish.
Oh my god, it's so good. But yeah, like, the season finales will mess you up. I, like, ugly crying, Kyle.
Really?
Yeah.
They're, like, just only a half hour long.
I know. Just wait. I feel like you've only scratched the surface. But yes, like, all the good things you've heard about One Day of Time are super merited. So I'm excited for you to keep watching. My mom actually just started watching. And she loves it, too.
Oh,
my gosh. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited to, like, you're going to make me, like, watch this after this podcast.
Good.
Instead of going to sleep. Like,
I'm, like, the number one purveyor for One Day at a Time and, like, weird things like Mary Poppins. Jessica's also watching One Day at a Time. She said, I have started watching One Day at a Time, and I love it so much. Even though I'm Mexican, I can relate so much. Also, my uncle, husband to my aunt, is Cuban, so I can't wait to show it to him. And Jessica, I'm totally in the same boat. My family is also Mexican, and I see so much of myself in them. My mom, too, specifically, when she started watching, we have an aunt who, back when my mom was younger, she used to live in Echo Park, which is where the show is based, technically. And she was just like, oh my god, like she's like, their apartment looks like our aunt's apartment, and so, like, it was just really funny how they were able to kind of work that in, even though, like, obviously, like, I think some of the humor, like, if you're Cuban, it'll be extra funny. But yeah, I just love how, like, regardless of whether you're Latino or not, you can totally relate to these characters and how they interact with each other. And yeah, family is family, you know, and all families are a little crazy. So,
oh my gosh, I cannot wait. I seriously cannot wait. Thank you for mentioning it, because now I got excited again.
Yes!
Okay, so, all right, this next one, dear God, like, I think the name is Julie, but I don't remember if it's Jewel, actually. Do you remember?
I always say Jewel.
Okay, all right.
But it might be Julie. Jewel, write in and phonetically tell us if we've been pronouncing your name wrong for, like, 5 million years. I'll feel really
okay,
bad.
Okay, because I'm... Oh my gosh, I'm gonna die if I've been saying it wrong the entire time. But Julie Gamash tweeted us and said, I caught up. Since I'm officially caught up on episodes now, woo, the current book counter on our Goodreads group is 138. I don't know what that means, but yeehaw.
So Jewel has actually been, she started a Goodreads group for the podcast because we talk about so many books, and every time we mention a new one, she adds it so that people can find it easier, if, like, they don't have a piece of paper or whatever. And so since she started that, I guess we've mentioned 138 books, so that's impressive.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, you got a few more to add to your list this time, because Kyle and I both mentioned books. So
yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, that actually does it for our show this week. But thank you guys so much for writing in and letting us know what you've been thinking in terms of, like, pop culture related stuff you've been consuming. And Kyle, thank you so much for hopping on Hype with me this week. It was so much fun to have you back.
It was so fun.
Yeah, it was just really great. Yeah, well, thank you so much. And hopefully we can have you back at some point
soon. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I'm like, it was amazing talking about all my favorite fandom things again. So I can't wait to do it again in the future.
Puts you in such a good mood. Like, sometimes the show gets so serious, and then sometimes you're like, oh, and I'm so excited about that. So it's a roller coaster.
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, we will see you guys very soon for another episode. Thank you so much once again for listening. My name is Pamela.
I'm Kyle. Bye.
And we'll see you guys next time. Bye.